Hello, and welcome to Highly Irregular, the podcast with no right angle. Think of it like a map to a long-lost treasure. Around the edges are the uncharted waters, but in the centre, it actually looks quite familiar. Isn't that your neighbourhood? I think it is. And there's an X on... Is that on your house? It is on your house. What does the legend say? X equals you. Oh, isn't that sweet? The map's saying the treasure was inside you all along. How nice. See, the real treasure was in our hearts. In your heart. Actually, what is that on your chest? No, the line of stitches and the two lines of stitches sort of crossed over each other. They almost look like the cross on the... Oh my God. Okay, don't panic. I think the treasure's inside you. Okay, stay here. I'll go and get help.
Lassie! Come by! Lassie! Where's that bleeding dog got to? Maybe she walked into one of the other sketches. Come by! Lassie!
Hello, and thank you all for coming here today to participate in this tender process for the Department of Health. As you will know from the brief, we are on the brink of a devastating childhood scurvy epidemic as youth intake of fruits and vegetables has been plummeting in recent months. We need a bold new marketing campaign to encourage children to put down those crisps and eat natural. I'm very excited to see what you've all brought to the table. Who'd like to pitch their idea first? How about you over there? Hi, this is Dean Ascott on behalf of Solution Solutions. Okay, so you know how cigarette packets have those graphic warnings on the sides, right? What if we put pictures of children with scurvy on the back of packets of Haribo? That is a terrible idea. Next? Okay, hear me out. So you know beans, right? We make beans. Wait for it. Part of a school curriculum. What? That's insane. And it's also education policy making, not a marketing campaign. Hasn't anyone got a decent idea?
Forget those idiots. I've got a killer campaign that'll blow your socks off. Now, what does every kid aged 6 to 11 love?
Harry Potter?
Trap music.
They do?
Hubert, hit the tape.
Girl shows up beside me like the apple on my eye. Takes one look at me and asks me if I got supplies. Yes, I say as I pull out my Granny Smith and Wesson. Take her whole bite, teach those phony ducks to listen. I'm just eating fruit, I'm just eating fruit. I'm just eating fruit, I'm just eating fruit. Have a pair like murder secker, hit you like the hammer. Playing on the wing, just call me Adam Banana. Jumping those bananas like my name is Peter Siddle. Eating tons of cran like I'm the dad from Malcolm in the Middle. I'm just eating fruit, I'm just eating fruit. Get me in a jacuzzi. Girl, I'll make you a smoothie. Yeah, your hair look curvy, but I think you might have scurvy. I'm a berry bandit, I'm a cherry man now. Call me Trey Guevara, cause I'm coming for you now. I'm just eating fruit, I'm just eating fruit.
I'm just eating fruit, I'm just like. So what do you think?
God, these kids are f***ed.
Welcome back to Book Club. It's now time for the final chapter of No Time to Run, the spy thriller novel by celebrity gardener Barry Greenfinger. Previously, secret agent Hayden Hawke went to the mansion of drug baron Ivanov Ivanovich and uncovered a plot to blow up Royal Tunbridge Wells with a nuclear device the very next day. He also encountered Ivanov's stunning wife, Yvonne Ivanovich, who he totally could have slept with if he wanted to. So, let's see if he can prevent the destruction of his beloved Tunbridge Wells. No Time to Run, Chapter 4. Royal Tunbridge Wells, yes, that Royal Tunbridge Wells, in sunny Kent, was on the brink of nuclear annihilation. The unthinkable was about to happen, and what would follow that didn't even bear thinking about. Hayden arrived at the centre of town to find it heaving with pedestrian traffic. He hadn't seen it this busy since Monty Don stopped off on his book tour. That smug tart Monty, he thought. You never see that kind of reception for the real TV gardeners, the ones who actually get down and dirty. They don't get their shows renewed, not like producer's pet Don. He leapt out of the stealth Porsche and pushed through the throngs of onlookers to find the source of a commotion. In a distance, he could faintly hear a helicopter circling in the sky. It was like the whole world was here to witness the end. Finally, he reached the main square. Up on stage was the mayor, holding a microphone in front of a big blue ribbon and flanked by two confetti cannons. Of course, the new shopping centre! This wasn't good. He skirted round to the side and shimmied up a drainpipe. From the roof of the building, he surveyed the scene. The stage in front of the shopping centre was hastily constructed, propped up by metal scaffolds. Beneath the raised floor was only empty space. No bomb there. To the left, a veranda ran adjacent to the stage, covered in climbing hydrangea. A hardy plant that can withstand temperatures down to minus 20 degrees. It made for a sensible choice in a busy public space like this. However, it can also be a fine choice at home if you don't have the time for high-maintenance climbing plants and need something reliable to dress your trellis with. While admiring the hydrangea, something suddenly caught Hayden's eye behind the veranda. A window on the second floor was slightly ajar, and behind it, a blinking red light. Could that be it? Coming out of the window was a thin black wire, running down and disappearing into the hanging greenery. Hayden shimmied back down and jostled his way through the crowd to the side of the stage. So excited were the punters for the new retail shopping experience on the horizon, they didn't pay him a second thought as he crouched down in the leaves, searching for the other end of that mysterious cable. Come on, he muttered as he rummaged through the thick leaves, until finally he grasped the lead in his sweaty palm.
Come by!
What?
Come by!
Who's...
Lassie!
I'm trying to read a book here.
Lassie!
Are you okay?
What's... Where has that bleeding dog got to? Come by! Lassie!
Let's finish this chapter later.
Lassie!
Okay? Alright, we'll pick it up in a bit. Hey, Stu Horgan here.
Who?
Of course, you haven't met me yet, but I've met you. Have you seen Time Traveller's Wife? It's a bit like that, so that would make me your... You're the Time Traveller, and I'm your wife-to-be. I'm your wife. I will be your wife. Thanks for listening to episode 4 of Highly Irregular. I hope you're enjoying it. Yeah, so that is the... This will be the end of Book Club. I know that the chapter got interrupted there, but it will be finished later in the episode, don't worry. I hope you're enjoying the jazzed up sound effects I've got going on. That's actually inspired by a lovely little podcast called Alleyways, who have a great little mini-series called Stories I Wrote, if you're reaching in a book club and finding yourself hankering for another alternative audiobook experience. Speaking of, I'd love to bring Book Club back if you liked it. Let me know what kind of book you'd like to
here next. You know, obviously this one was a spy thriller novel by a gardener. But feel free to send me any suggestions of other genres, you know, romance, historical, anyone you'd like it to be written from the perspective of, shall we say. If you've got any writing prompts or even stories of your own, send them in. I would love to see them. You can find me by email at podirregular@gmail.com. You can also find me on all social media channels, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Podly Irregular. I'll also just add I've got another fun thing planned for No Time to Run, so keep an eye out for that soon. Now, last episode, I asked you what your personal records are, and I've got a couple of very interesting responses to read out, so let's kick up the reading out records music and crack on with it. Alice thinks that she probably has the record for the longest dislocation. She's now at 13 years and counting. It's definitely a very impressive record, but I wonder if she's ever considered the legal ramifications. Now, according to UK common law, after 10 to 12 years of unopposed occupation of a site which is not registered under the land registry, which, Alice, I'm going to go out on a limb here and assume that your body is unregistered land, the occupying party may, under squatter's rights, take ownership of that site. It then stands to reason that your dislocation has now legally become a relocation and is therefore under no obligation to return to its original position. I hope you find some comfort in knowing that your unique situation will forever be referenced in case law. I also heard from Tony, who sent me a variety of records. One about eating donuts, one about eating seafood sticks, one about eating a pizza. Are you sensing a theme here? One about boiling eggs in a pan, and also about finishing a very large quantity of cans of Guinness in one evening. Now, maybe one of these things on its own isn't quite a world record, but it might be possible that no one in the world has done all of those things quite as well as Tony has. So I tweeted the following message to Guinness World Records. Hi Guinness World Records. My friend has eaten 10 Krispy Kreme original glazed donuts in under 15 minutes, eaten 32 seafood sticks in one sitting, eaten an 18-inch pizza in under an hour, boiled 24 eggs in a pan, and he's drunk 15 cans of Guinness in one evening. I don't think there's anyone else in the world that has done all of those things that well. Does that make it a world record? By the way, the seafood sticks were consumed inside a car and without shame. I believe this further cements the likelihood of only him having done all of these things. I just realised this looks like I'm quote-unquote asking for a friend. It's not about me. I wish I could have done all of those things, but alas, I don't have the makings of a champion. I still haven't actually heard anything back from Guinness World Records about that query. So until they tell me otherwise, I'm going to go ahead and declare Tony's feats an official world record. And Alice's too. There's no way someone's been dislocated longer than that. Congratulations to both of you. Okay, we'll get right back into the thick of it after just this quick word from our sponsor. Hate going outside and realising it's raining when you thought it would be sunny? Sunny when you thought it would be cloudy? Or cloudy when by all rights it should be chucking it down? Worry no more with this fantastic new device. Finally, you can know the weather in advance of heading out to meet it. This stunning gizmo can be easily installed onto any exterior wall of your home, and with its patented always-on display, is guaranteed not to let you down. As they always say, forewarned is forearmed, and if you're forearmed, then hey presto, you're halfway to becoming an octopus. The proof is in the pudding, and our indicators' intuitive readouts make it so simple to see what the weather's going to be like. When it says it's sunny, it will even let you sample some of that sunlight. And when it rains, it will gather a sample of that precipitation on its surface so you can inspect it yourself. So get the gadget that everybody's raving about. The Witness Indicating Novel Deliverer of Objective Weather, or WINDO for short. Now it's time for everyone's favourite TV chef, Al Dente, in his brand new radio cooking show, Feast for the Ears. Hello, hello, yes, it's me, TV's Al Dente, and welcome to my new radio show. Some of you may be wondering what happened to my acclaimed television show, Feast for the Eyes. Well, let's just say that certain executives decided I was no longer to their taste, which to me seems like a clear indication that they themselves have no taste. What with me being something of an expert on matters of taste, you might say. But I digress. Never you worry, dear listener. There is absolutely nothing you can do on a TV show that you can't do over the good old airwaves, and I am here to prove it. You will hardly notice any difference whatsoever, I assure you. Okay, so today we'll be making a lovely beef stroganoff, one of my absolute favourites. It's packed with flavour, it's creamy, and it always looks so delicious. Not that that matters anymore. So first of all, you want to take your steak, cut it into pieces about this big. Strips about a centimetre thick, and then set those aside. Cut up your onion and mushroom. I've done mine already, as you can hear. And fry them up until they're nice and soft. Look how the onion turns this lovely... Well, imagine the onion turning this beautiful golden colour. And now you can pour in half a pot of double cream. That'll make a lovely rich sauce to pair with our steak. Speaking of which, back to the steak. Get your skillet nice and hot, then throw in those strips. Be very careful here. You don't want to overdo these, just long enough that they're still nice and tender inside. See how I've seared the outside? That's exactly how you want them. Oh, bugger, of course you can't see. So what I was saying was that once you have the outside seared and you can't see any more red, you want to lift them out immediately, because if you leave them any longer, they're going to be all well done and chewy all the way through. And honestly, if you mess the steak up, then what's the point in even... Christ! They're still in there! Get them out! Get them out! Oh, well, there's my stroganoff ruined. How am I supposed to do this when they can't see what I'm making? Right, that's it. Cut! What a waste of bloody time that was. Waste of a good steak. Waste of onions. I've still got half a pot of cream, I suppose, but how am I meant to take that home now I've opened it?
Put it in your pocket.
What? Who said that?
It's me, your conscience.
My conscience? But why don't you sound like me? Why do you sound like, Arnold Schwarzenegger, sort of?
You can take the cream. Put it in your coat pocket.
In my pocket? Why need spill? Well, I suppose maybe not if I'm careful, but it still seems rather...
Pocket cream. This is the way.
I'm not sure I fully, Oh, dear God, what is happening now?
Pocket cream. Pocket cream. When you use some in a recipe, how do you get the rest from A to B?
I need to lie down. I can't believe it. I cannot believe it. Up in that tree, just over yonder, is an African rock warbler. Now these birds, they migrate up this time of year on their way to the highlands where they nest and lay their eggs, and they pass through here a maximum of 2 days a year. I've never seen one before in my life. They're extremely rare. I cannot believe there's one just up here in this tree. Look at it. It's beautiful.
Come by.
No, no.
Come by.
Shh.
That's it.
Oh, my God.
That's it.
You scared it away.
Have you seen a dog come through here?
No.
Okay, pal.
My.
Come by.
My rock warbler.
That's it.
Idiot.
Come by. Goodbye.
Welcome back to Book Club, once again. Just to recap, Hayden Hawke has just located the wire leading down from the bomb to the side of the stage. Let's jump right back in and finish this story. He gazed down at it, and it almost disappeared underneath the stage. until, at the centre, it shot up through the floor into... Into what? Hayden peered up over the other side of the stage. The confetti cannon detonator! For the first time, he started listening to the mayor's speech, the words filling his head with sudden clarity.
I now pronounce this shopping centre.
His hands were reaching for the cannon detonator. He was about to unwittingly trigger the nuclear bomb and destroy the entire town. Hayden had to act now. He leapt up onto the stage and screamed out, Mayor, don't open that shopping centre! The crowd gasped.
Who the hell are you?
Exclaimed the mayor.
I will open this shopping centre, just you try and stop me.
Hayden charged forward and dove into him, knocking him off his feet. The crowd gasped once more. Over the sound system, they could hear the mayor protesting as they grappled on the floor.
Stop! What are you doing? I am the mayor of Tunbridge Wells!
Before Hayden wrestled the microphone from his lapel, and they heard him speak.
There is a bomb in this square, rigged to blow when you launch that confetti. You have to believe me!
At the mention of a bomb, panic set in, and the crowd quickly began to disperse. As for the mayor, he seemed to have gone into shock, laying stunned on the floor as Hayden got back to his feet. He leapt towards the podium and scrambled to find a way inside it. He had to disconnect the detonator. Prying off one of the panels, he looked inside to find the wire connected from the bottom of the handle. He pulled out the miniature hedge clippers from his utility belt, said a small prayer, and cut the wire. He shut his eyes, fearing the worst, anticipating an almighty blast. But instead, he was met with silence. It had worked. The bomb was disconnected. He sank to his knees. Tunbridge Wells was saved. In his peripheral vision, he saw the mayor pulling his phone out while hastily retreating, no doubt calling the police. Not a problem, thought Hayden. All will be explained in due course. Strangely, the helicopter that had been circling in the air seemed to be getting louder now. Much louder. As he turned around, he saw it bearing down on the square. The wind whistled through his hair like 1,000 leaf blowers as it came down to land. He looked around for somewhere to escape to, but it was too late. There was no time. No time to run. Hayden would have to face his foe. The door opened and out stepped a slender figure, one hand sweeping her long blonde hair off her face as it whipped around her, the other clasping a Glock 26 9mm semi-automatic pistol. Hayden's eyes widened. It was Ivan Ivanovich.
How wonderful to see you again, Martin.
Or should I say, Hayden?
It's over, Ivan. The bomb's been disconnected, shouted Hayden.
Yes, I saw your little hijinks from up there. Most impressive. But over, I'm afraid it is not.
Where's your husband, Ivanov Ivanovich?
Ivan threw her head back and laughed. You still haven't worked it out. Oh, bless your heart. There is no Ivanov Ivanovich.
What?
Exclaimed Hayden. There never was. I created him. A shady figurehead to lead the cartel. Strong, ruthless, but totally fabricated. You see, it's much easier to pull the strings from the shadows, away from the limelight.
You were going to destroy this whole town. For what? Money?
Why, yes, of course. Whatever else. Honestly, I had you pegged for a smart fellow, but I see now I was mistaken. Shame. You're quite the looker.
You're evil.
And you, I'm afraid, are dead. With that, she raised her arm, pointed the gun to his chest, and pulled the trigger. The gunshot echoed around the square, its deadly tone ringing away through the streets. But as the sound dissipated around them, Hayden Hawke remained standing, unmoved.
How?
Whispered Yvonne, her mouth agape. Hayden slowly reached into his shirt pocket and pulled out his pocket trowel. In the middle of its shiny head, a huge dent had formed where the bullet ricocheted off. Hayden smirked.
I guess I do have a big enough trowel.
In a flash, he whipped his wrist around and launched the trowel through the air. It shot forth like an arrow and smacked into the nonplussed mafiosa's forehead, knocking her out cold. As he stood over her, he pulled his wrist up to his face and pushed a small button on the side of his spy watch. A tinny voice called out from the gadget.
Agent Hawke, what is your position? Is the situation contained?
Hayden Hawke smiled.
Hello, Spencer. You're not going to believe this.
And so ends No Time to Run by Barry Greenfinger. Barry, mate, I'd stick to the gardening if I were you. So, one meeting ends and another begins. Remember that meeting you've got now? Please tell me you remembered the meeting. Have you got the slides on you? Good. Tuck your shirt in. What do they teach you at business school these days? Well, off you pop. And if you get stuck at any point, just start saying synergy. Always does the trick for me.